At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Welcome to Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild.
Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities.
It's just sitting there, spinning in outer space as it orbits the Earth 239,000 miles away. It's a big, round rock that controls the tides and moderates our planet's movements on its axis. And it's ripe for the taking. At least, that's what people have been saying for decades. The moon doesn't just represent one small step for man, nor one giant leap for mankind. It represents a new frontier entirely. Real estate. In space. Back in 1967, over 100 nations signed a document known as the Outer Space Treaty, which basically outlined the rules by which every country should explore and inhabit outer space. There were a number of principles, including one that stated, "Outer space shall be free for exploration and use by all states," as well as, "The moon and other celestial bodies shall be used exclusively for peaceful purposes." But 1 year earlier, a different governing body took it upon themselves to draft its own document, one stating that its people owned the moon. It was called the Declaration of Lunar Ownership, and it was signed by 35 citizens from the town of Geneva, Ohio. The declaration gave the people of Geneva, and I quote, "full possession and complete responsibility of the moon," at least according to them. And although everyone elsewhere was free to enjoy the moonlight given off by the celestial body, Geneva was not responsible for any issues incurred by people who moon-bathed a little too much. But the document had another component, one that allowed the town to sell off 100 plots of land on the moon's surface for $100 a pop. And yet the people of Geneva weren't the only ones who had come up with the idea to sell land on the moon. About 14 years earlier, a man named Dennis Hope figured it out on his own. Hope was a car salesman and a ventriloquist, and he had hit a rough patch in his life. He and his wife were getting divorced, and he'd been living paycheck to paycheck. Mr. Hope was, well, losing hope. Until one day when he was driving down the road and looked out the window toward the sky. And there it was, all that lunar land, ripe for the taking. He did a little digging at the local college library and found the Outer Space Treaty from the mid-60s. As he read through the document, he noticed something. Even though the treaty stated that no nation could declare ownership over the moon, there was nothing in there that said a person couldn't own it. Hope, believing that he had found a loophole, filed a claim with his local county seat for the whole of the moon's surface, along with the surfaces of every other planet in the solar system, except for the Earth and the Sun. Nobody, of course, took him seriously, but after consulting with three supervisors across two separate floors in 5 hours, he finally got what he wanted: ownership over the moon and the planets. He then wrote to the General Assembly of the United Nations, as well as the Russian government, letting them know that there was a new sheriff in town, and that if anyone wanted to sell land in space, they had to go through him first. For those wondering, Hope will sell anyone an acre of moonland for about $35. But Dennis and the people of Ohio were not alone in believing the moon was up for grabs. Others have been declaring ownership of it for years. Before Geneva, there was a science fiction fan club in Berkeley, California, that had laid claim to part of the moon in 1952. That same year, the chairman of the Hayden Planetarium in New York planned on selling parcels of land there for $1 an acre. And in 1954, a Chilean lawyer named Genaro Guerra de Veda published three separate announcements of his claim of the moon on the official diary of Chile. Even President Richard Nixon acknowledged Veda's ownership, sending him a telegram via the U.S. Embassy in 1969. Nixon requested permission for his astronauts to land there. It doesn't matter how far away it is or how expensive it is to go there. For every person who gazes at the night sky and sees the enormity of the universe, there will always be someone who looks up and wonders, how much could I get for that? And now for something a bit lighter. Every day, the world continues to plunge deeper into darkness due to war, climate change, famine, and other catastrophes. And meanwhile, scholars, leaders, and CEOs with too much money have been dreaming up ways to save humanity, or at least themselves. Some of their plans involve inhabiting other planets. Others believe building big underground bunkers with their own ecosystems is the way to go. But one man had another idea. It just wasn't exactly feasible yet. You could say he had his head in the clouds. His name was Richard Buckminster Fuller, the architect who made the geodesic dome popular. If you've ever walked around Epcot at Disney World, you've undoubtedly seen the giant golf ball-shaped sphere known as Spaceship Earth, a phrase that he also coined. Born in 1895, Fuller attended Harvard for a short time before he was expelled for missing his exams and partying too much. He then traveled to Canada, where he took a job at a mill, until re-enrolling at Harvard again in 1915. But that didn't last long either. He was soon expelled once again, ultimately joining the U.S. Navy to serve during World War I. In fact, Fuller didn't get into architecture until the 1920s, when he started working on the stockade building system with his father-in-law. This was a construction system made using bricks of compressed wood shavings with large vertical holes drilled down their centers. The holes would then be filled with concrete so that these stacked blocks couldn't move. After that company failed, though, Fuller contemplated ending his life in 1927. That is, until he experienced a life-changing event that turned everything around for him. He felt as though a ball of white light surrounded him and lifted him into the air. And then a voice spoke, telling him, "You do not have the right to eliminate yourself. You do not belong to you. You belong to the universe." Fuller was transformed by the experience and got back to work trying to improve humanity by revolutionizing housing. He designed the Dymaxion House, which was an inexpensive home that could be produced at scale and dropped into place on a plot of land. There was also the geodesic dome, which came about in 1951. The dome was cheap, resilient, and easy to assemble, making it ideal for housing, especially in lower-income areas and harsh climates. And that design led to another creation, one that had the potential to change housing all over the world. Japanese media mogul Masutaro Shoriki had challenged Fuller to create a community to accommodate Japan's growing population. To do this, the houses would be required to float on Tokyo Bay, linked together like a giant city. And what Fuller came up with definitely did float, but not on the bay. His homes were designed to rise into the air like balloons instead. He called them Spherical Tensegrity Atmospheric Research Stations, or STARS for short. They were also known as Cloud Nines and were giant geodesic spheres filled with air. Each dome was intended to be a half mile in diameter, yet only weigh a fraction of the weight of the air inside. Using a sustainable heat source like solar energy or human movement inside, the 1 degree Fahrenheit increase of the internal temperature could cause the dome to float. If a person wanted to remain in one spot, they could tether their massive sphere to a mountain or another anchor. Or if they wanted to travel the world, they could drift freely throughout the sky. But Fuller didn't just picture them as houses. He also anticipated using them as impromptu emergency relief sites during disasters. Unfortunately, his dream remained just that, a dream. The technology didn't exist at the time to make these Cloud Nines a reality. Fuller himself believed that they wouldn't be feasible for another 50 years. Well, that time has come and gone, and we're no closer to living in floating spheres now than we were back then. But if floods, wildfires, and heat waves continue to pummel the planet, then we may be forced to find new ways to live. And right now, a geodesic balloon doesn't sound half bad.
I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show. And you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious.